Hello and welcome to Armenian News Network Groom. In this second part of our conversation on Groom on Turkey, Aspet Kocikyan continues to explore Turkey's transformation throughout the 20th century and into the 21st, and the underlying power dynamics powering these changes. Professor Kocikyan is a senior lecturer of political science and international relations at Bentley University in Massachusetts, where he teaches courses on the Middle East and former Soviet space.
Hello and welcome back, everyone. I'm Aspet Kocikyan. In the second part of our conversation on Grung about Turkey, we explore its foreign policy towards the South Caucasus, focusing on relations with Azerbaijan and Armenia. We continue our conversation today with Professor Arasanjan, Professor Varujan Keramyan, Diana Yayloyan, and Professor Varam Dermatebosyan. Welcome, everyone.
Moving from the south to the east, and Turkish relations or Turkish foreign policy towards specifically two countries, about the South Caucasus in general, but because of time limitation, let's focus on two, Armenia and Azerbaijan. And this topic, this discussion, this conversation becomes even more relevant because just last week, we witnessed a conflict escalate between Armenia and Azerbaijan and Turkish responses to it. Varujan, I would like to start with you and ask your opinion about Turkish-Azeri relations specifically, not in a historical context, but very briefly, in terms of where does Azerbaijan fall in the larger context of Turkish foreign policy?
Well, first of all, one needs to understand how in Turkey, Azerbaijan is generally perceived. In a way, Azerbaijan is kind of an orient of Turkey. So there is a kind of a orientalist feeling towards Azerbaijan in general society, and which is also in a way reflected in the Turkish elite.
Sorry, Varujan, just wanted to clarify. When you say orientalism, does that also mean there is a level of condensation towards Azerbaijan?
There is a kind of, Azerbaijan is accepted or perceived as a place where there is something Turkish, but there are more exotic things like Russian legacy, Soviet legacy, Iranian legacy. They are Shia. So, and they are living in a remote place, which is actually a part of the general Turkish world, but it's far and it's again in the east. And the most important thing is that Turkey is much more developed in the eyes of Turks than Azerbaijan. And in many cases, we can see this on very basic level, in everyday conversations, in everyday dialogues. And we can see also this in the rhetorics of the Turkish elite. Of course, Azerbaijan owes much to Turkey during its state building process, and still it has a huge influence on Azerbaijan. And in many ways, Azerbaijani elite tried to borrow all the things, all the political culture, all the mechanism, institutions which were there in Turkey. And it was again kind of an example of orientalism. When you are being a former colony, not a colony of Turkey, but kind of a colony, and you are trying to bring the things which you think are very effective and efficient in the metropole, so you bring them back home.
Sort of the light of civilization.
In a way, yes. But this was the case before the, let's say, the second half, the second stage of Ali of the Sun, who currently see and perceives himself and his country as a very young and very ambitious country, a very young state, which can't even imagine that it can be, under influence of any metropole, even if it is Turkey. And this is why there in several cases sometimes we see that there is not an obvious, but still there is a disagreement or a certain level of a misunderstanding between these two countries. But in sense of more general Turkish understanding of the region, of course it's the zone of an area of influence. And here I would like also to bring us back to the your previous question, which is what's the concept or ideology of modern Turkish foreign policy? And here we should say, or we should say that Turkey currently tries to create its own zone of influence in this big or bigger Middle East. And one of the main parts of this big Middle East is, of course, Southern Caucasus. There were some endeavors back in 2000s when Turkey was trying to use more soft power instrumentarium to create a kind of a Caucasian plateau of discussions or some kind of other initiatives. But of course, the main idea was to bring both Armenia, Georgia, and Azerbaijan under the huge umbrella, which was called then shared history. But currently it openly says that we are trying to build the zone of our influence, which is exceptional, which has an exceptional influence on our security. And this is actually also articulated in the concept. I don't want to call it ideology, but in a new concept, which is now openly being used by the Turkish elite, and it is called the concept of Mavi Vatan, which is which we can translate as the blue motherland. And the main idea of this concept is that Turkey is not a land power; it is also a sea power. So we should have our influence on the Eastern Mediterranean. We should have our influence on Black Sea region and on the Caspian Sea. So this again shows us their understanding of the exceptional existential security environment for Turkey. This was first ever. This concept was first ever invented by the head of marine power in Turkey, of Turkish armed forces, but now it is widely used by the ruling elite. And what we see currently, both in the eastern part of Mediterranean Sea, what we see in also Red Sea, what we see in Caucasus, is in a way preparation or different stages of the same ideology and same endeavor. And of course, this has a strong correlation with the national pact or national oath, which was brought by Kemal and other his team members in the beginning of the so-called independence war. And all the borders which were there in the national pact currently are being in a way reconstructed, be it in a northern Syria, it is in northern Iraq, it is in Balkans, and of course it should be in some perspective also in South Caucasus. And in this sense, Azerbaijan is just a place where there are less problems for the Turkish influence than in other countries.
Diana, what about your take on this? You know, you've been around. Probably you might have encountered Azerbaijani students studying in Turkey, but at the same time, you might have heard about perceptions and articulation of ideas about what Azerbaijan is. How do Turkish individuals see Azerbaijan? What's your take?
First, I would like to just briefly also refer to the beginning of your question regarding the doctrine, and then to connect this with your question on the perception of Azerbaijan in Turkey. So when we actually try to conceptualize the new foreign policy under the AKP, there is a existential difference with all previous policies in sense of, for the first time, the leadership of AKP is trying to craft its own, its policy within its own civilizational basin. And if you remember the strategic depth doctrine of Davutoğlu, when he was trying exactly to raise this point, that this is not only necessary for Turkey to start its policy within its own civilizational basin, but this is also a matter of national security for Turkey. And this, of course, also affected the way that Turkey is now relying on its and dealing with its traditional security alliances. And we saw this, especially the split between the U.S. and Turkey in Syria, when U.S. and Europe were supporting the Kurdish guerrillas, which was one of the most sensitive topics for Turkey. And regarding the foreign policy, also important thing of Turkey, and here Turkey is going close to Russia in the way that the Turkish political establishment sees the threats in the region and the way the political establishment is transforming its strategic culture. It's the norms, it's the values, and the way that the political establishment of Turkey is seeing the military power for the first time, also in comparison with the previous governments cross-border operations has increased, and this is also leading to the increasing militarization of Turkish politics. Regarding the Azerbaijani relations, from the outside, it seems that there is this brotherly relationship, as both political leaders Erdogan and Aliyev like to emphasize all the time. And yes, there is, of course, a certain base in Turkey, the Pan-Turkish base, or the MHP, the right-wing nationalist party, which is also making these references to Azerbaijani people as being their Turkic brothers. But we should not forget that Turkey is not consisting only of people of Pan-Turkish or people of nationalist background. There are also a large leftist group. There are also liberals within Turkey. And there is an increasing electorate and increasing basis of HDP pro-Kurdish party, which, of course, leads to the different perception of those same issues that the AKP government, the military, the nationalist MHP party is seeing. Those different groups are seeing in a very different way. Among leftist groups, among liberal groups, and among Kurdish groups, there is no such support of Azerbaijan as a brother, especially among Kurds, due to them being non-Turkic groups. And also, interestingly, if you see, despite the rising economic connections, of course, Turkey and Azerbaijan are increasingly participating in the same energy security projects. But despite this fact, still there are issues of mistrust between Azerbaijan and Turkey. And another thing that I also would like to emphasize is that when we talk about the Turkish Pan-Turkists, and this is very important to keep in mind that sometimes this is also being not the reality in the sense of this issue is being very easily instrumentalized. And on the issue of Uyghurs in China, we can easily see how actually the AKP and MHP parties, which are claiming to represent both Islamic Ummah in sense of AKP and in sense of MHP representing its Turkic brothers, when the CHP and E party and HDP put the proposal in parliament to start for Turkey to start investigation of the conditions of Uyghurs in education camps in China, so MHP and AKP, they rejected this proposal. And instead, it was HDP, Kurdish part HDP, that was speaking on the behalf of the oppressed Uyghur people. So we also see how there is a very intersectional way of using the different identities when it comes to instrumentalization by different parties.
And I would like to ask, regarding this issue of our Azerbaijan-Turkey relations, are the relations symmetrical in a sense that how people perceive Azerbaijan in Turkey and how Azeris perceive? Obviously, this can go into a larger discussion, which we have limited time for. Is Turkey perceived as the larger brother, the savior, the bringer of light, and so on and so forth? And also, other than economic and military lip service of actual assistance, to what extent the relationships are deep, really deep? And does it matter where in Turkey are we talking about? Like in eastern Anatolia, when we talk about cities where there's a large Azeri population living, anyone can take this?
Okay, as I said, the cooperation and the influence of Turkey in Azerbaijan was much larger back in 90s and in the beginning of 2000s. It has some limitations currently. As I said, Azerbaijan is a very young state and the population is a very, they have some inspirations and they have some motivation to make their country less dependent on any power from Russia to Turkey. Not surprisingly, Turkish influence on the society is more limited to the cultural or even pop culture area than to more, let's say, serious things. Of course, there are many people who are watching Turkish TV shows. There are many people who are going to Turkey for vacation, for holidays. They are, first of all, they use Turkey as the best place to go to have high quality equipment, high quality trainings, high quality, even in the health system, they use many things which are produced in Turkey and they borrow them from Turkey. And of course, I'm not talking about the military, which is which has several formats of cooperation with Turks. But again, as I said, in the Azerbaijani society, for the most part of them, Turkey is not a big brother, it is just a brother. It is brother which should also respect all the aspirations and all the positions which Azerbaijan currently takes. So in this sense, this is very important, but which is vice versa in Turkey, as I tried to say in my previous intervention.
Thank you, Varujan.
Jump in here.
Go ahead, Varam.
Look, I think overall the Armenians overall, and especially in Armenia, Republic of Armenia. So there is this misperception of Turkish-Azerbaijani relations, and Varujan is right to pinpoint that. It's not only about affection of Azerbaijan and Turkey, between Azerbaijan and Turkey. There is much more in this, you know, between these two countries. In Azerbaijan, the memories are still fresh about what happened in the 1990s. If you look back, more and more Azerbaijani scholars are mentioning and discussing and criticizing Turkish approach in the 1990s, because if you look back, other than closing the border with Armenia, what else Turkey has done to Azerbaijan in the 1990s? This is a general question that has been raised by many scholars and observers in Azerbaijan. So they are really trying to demystify Turkish image in Azerbaijan. And I guess to a large extent, they are successful. And more dissenting voices are heard in Azerbaijan also about other problems that exist between Azerbaijan and Turkey. For instance, many Turks are questioning Azerbaijan's sincerity in its relations with Turkey. They are saying why Azerbaijan is not recognizing Northern Cyprus, why Azerbaijan is not condemning is not supporting Turkey in its Kurdish movement or its anti-Kurdish guerrilla movement and all other manifestations of different policy-related problems that exist between Turkey and Azerbaijan. So these are the issues that exist between these two countries and many others. Because of time limitations, I don't want to go into details. But when you try to list the disagreements between these two countries, it's quite a long list of disagreements. And we see an affection between Aliyev and Erdogan, but you know, deep in his heart, Erdogan doesn't have particular affection for Aliyev, because Aliyev doesn't represent the kind of leader that he, Erdogan, aspires or he particularly likes, because for Erdogan, Aliyev is too secular and too of a remnant of Soviet style political leader, although transformed into a new style Azerbaijani leader. So what I'm saying is, because of these glitches between these two countries, we need to realize, and especially our foreign policy needs to understand these differences, try to build a policy based on the disagreements and glitches and misunderstandings that exist between these two nations.
Varam, you bring a very interesting point and really multifaceted aspect of Turkish-Azerbaijani relations as well. I remember in Baku, there is the Şehitler Xiyabanı, the martyr of the Alley of Martyrs, or the the path of martyrs, where actually people, Azerbaijanis who were killed in the Soviet army intervention into 1990s. But on the side, there's also a small Turkish monument commemorating the Turkish soldiers who died in 1918 fighting the communists. And more often than not, that could be a barometer. I've seen it myself, where you would see that if there are relationships between the two are good, then you would see flowers and people, you know, putting flowers and rats on that monument. And when relations are bad, they would just go and demonstrate in front of it, bad between Turkey and Azerbaijan. So this is quite quite fascinating and quite interesting to understand the multi-nuanced aspect between the two.
May I just bring one example of the same monument aspect?
Yes, Varujan, of course.
Back in 2010, when there was a reconciliation between Armenia and Turkey, this monument became the symbol of Turkish-Azerbaijani misunderstanding between two countries. Because when Armenia and Turkey signed the protocols, just the same day, the flag in front of the monument in Baku, it was dropped down, the Turkish flag, and it was not raised before Turkey said that they are not going to ratify the protocol. So this is a brilliant example of the non-equal relations between non-equal understanding between two countries.
And I actually happened to be there not much after that agreement. And you could see still, you know, it was a bit bare without any flowers. So they were warming up to it still again. Perfect. Now, staying in the Caucasus, in the South Caucasus, this is going on to be quite multi-nuanced, multifaceted, as I said a couple of times, discussion. I want to see talk about Turkish-Armenian relations. But specifically as Turkey-Armenia relations. I don't want us to go into the details of Turkish-Armenian relations and so on and so forth. But I would like to ask Ara, first of all, your opinion about, have you seen any change in the relationship or perception as it is articulated by Turkish leadership towards Armenia, other than beyond just the rhetoric, that we're going to teach them a lesson, or we support the Azeris against the war, in their war against Armenia? Is there a more substantial evaluation that you can provide us about Turkey's view of Armenia?
I think after the collapse of the so-called football or soccer diplomacy, I think everything was put on the back burner in terms of bilateral relations. However, on the issue of the Armenian genocide, of course, the high point was the visit by Davutoglu to Armenia. I think it was in the late 2013. And that's the closest the Erdogan administration came to what we can call Armenian expectations. When the term inhumane in Sanlıkdışı was used a few times in official documents to describe what happened during the World War I and the genocide of the Armenians. And then, of course, we had the condolences in 2014, but no condemnation. And in 2015, the high point was allowing a mass and a requiem service in Istanbul by the local Armenian community for the souls of all the victims of what the Armenians see as the genocide, the Turks see as sad events, and the presence of a Turkish minister. But actually, the fact that Erdogan tried to torpedo the 100th anniversary of the genocide by moving the date of the Gallipoli event to with the same day, but more importantly, by the time when he basically failed to win a majority in the first elections of 2015, the swift changes actually now made the issue almost secondary. And I don't think there are any real attempts by anybody to push Armenians and the Turks back to the negotiating table. There was for a time this idea that Turkey expects Armenia to make some tangible concessions, like a withdrawal from a few areas around the former Nagorno-Karabakh Autonomous Oblast territory, which are now under Armenian control, in order to resume relations. But even that has now become impossible, partly because of the political rhetoric inside Armenia and inside Azerbaijan, which is becoming extremely intolerant of any possibility of mutual compromise, because mutual compromise means compromise on each side. So I think at this stage we're totally out, and I don't know what important thing can actually trigger. I don't want to figure out, but for example, if the American government decides to launch a war on Iran, what the American position will be on Turkish-Armenian relations. But I think it's something that neither the Armenians nor the Turks want, but it's something that the Americans will decide in the end. Besides that, anything more seismic than this, I cannot see really any change. The Turks and Russians are in a very, very, complicated relationship with one another. Both despise the West, both fear the West, but at the same time they can only expand their influence at the expense of one another. How they will try to balance that, that's a big issue. And essentially I think the Armenian government in the last years of Serge Sarkisian and ever since Nigel Pashinyan's in power has basically dropped that idea. And essentially as he's trying to pretend that that issue does not exist.
Thank you, Arda. This raises a question that Vara mentioned earlier about the nuances that exist in the Azerbaijani-Turkish relationship. And I'd like to point out that it's in the early 90s and the late 1990s as well, and even in early 2000, whenever there were talks about opening the Turkish-Armenian border or any sign that Turkey, the Turkish government, would be willing to do so, within 24 hours, there would be an Azerbaijani delegation in Ankara trying to put them back in line or trying to persuade them back in line. This is important to mention because obviously Turkey willingly or unwillingly has linked its relations with Armenia with that of Nagorno-Karabakh conflict. Now, that being said, Vadim, I'd like to get your opinion about, to get the Turkish perspective as to where do they see Armenia in general? Is there a separate policy or a separate view of Armenia independent of the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict in Turkish foreign policy mind?
So I want to make a couple of points here, which are essential. First things first, when we want to understand Turkish position concerning Armenia, we need to see 2009-10 as turning years, turning points in Turkish perception of Armenia and Turkish-Armenian official relations. Why that year? Because not only because of football diplomacy, but how Azerbaijan changed its the way it was working in Turkey. Until 2009, Azerbaijan was so sure and certain that Turkey would not do something that could potentially harm Azerbaijan that they didn't care to work in the information space of Turkey. And all of a sudden, after 2010, we see how Azerbaijan is trying to infiltrate in the Turkish information space. They are buying news holdings. They are trying to invest in the Turkish economy. They are creating opportunities for Turkish citizens. And the image of Azerbaijan, it has been slowly transformed in Turkey for the last 10 years, and Azerbaijan was able to slowly monopolize the Turkish public perception on the issue of Turkish-Armenian relations. And that was no step with Armenia until the Karabakh issue is solved. And by saying Karabakh issue is solved, it's mainly the way Azerbaijan wants it to be solved. So this is an important turning point. So even if you look at the recent statements of the Foreign Ministry of Turkey, we see that even the wording of the statements of the Turkish Foreign Ministry are somehow verbatim repetitions of Azerbaijan's Foreign Ministry statements. So we see this. I see this not as a convergence of interest, but more of a Turkish open-hearted embracing of Azerbaijani versions of narratives of what happened really on the front line. Having said that, I guess, and because of this, I would say that Turkey was able to absorb the one-sided and relentless the campaign, anti-Armenian campaign of Azerbaijan, and as a result, the recent public opinion survey of the Kadir Has University show that Armenia is perceived as one of the top threats to Turkish to Turkey, okay, to Turkish territorial integrity and the rest. So the public space was captured, the information space was captured and was manipulated on a consistent basis by Azerbaijan, and as a result, Armenia is constantly absent from Turkish information space, and that should be seen as a big minus, something that needs to be regained. It's not easy. It's going to be tremendously difficult to get supporters in the Turkish information space, because those people who could potentially side Armenia or be supportive of Armenian position are mostly gone. I'm talking about left-wing politicians. I'm talking about especially perhaps with the exception of HDP, but other like opinion makers are either in jail or they are not alive or they are abroad. So it's tremendously difficult now to talk, to initiate any discussions that can be reminiscent or that can remind us of the 2000s or the second half of the 2000s, when there are some discussions in the public space that you could hear dissenting voices. Now that is gone.
Now, Varam, let me ask this then. If by some accident you have the Azerbaijani manipulation of Turkish foreign policy or influence of Azerbaijani foreign policy on Turkish foreign policy, how would that change Turkish perception or Turkish foreign policy with Armenia?
No, I'm not saying that Turkey doesn't have its interests, and I'm not saying that Turkey is completely ignorant of its own interests or they don't really take their position into account. What I am claiming is that that Turkey is not really genuine when they are threatening Armenia, because it's an effort to please Azerbaijan rather to do what they really intend to do. It's an information inroads and into Armenian and perhaps to some extent some effort of threatening Armenia. But they know that it's too tough for them to fathom and to digest what's really going on in this part of the world. Turkey understand its foreign policy limitations. They understand that the situation between Armenia and Turkey is even worse now than it was 12 years ago when the football diplomacy kicked off. The relations between Turkey and Armenia are not going to improve anytime soon. And here, Armenia has its own blame, its own share of blame. Why? Because Armenia has been consistently loyal to this module, to this formula policy that Armenia wants to establish diplomatic relations without any preconditions. This policy has been a failure. This policy produced zero results, and it gained little support internationally until if we skip the 2008-10 interregnum. Other than this, Armenia should come up with a consistent policy vis-a-vis Turkey, sporadic statements, condemnation of Turkey in the same spirit and the same language as Turkey speaks to us is important, perhaps diplomatically, but diplomacy is more than a word. Diplomacy is more than words. It's about backdoor channel diplomacy work that should be done in order to see where this is going. If we are doing these statements, if Armenia's MFA is doing this, is making these statements in line with wild in a large foreign policy framework, I can understand that. But I don't see that a foreign policy concept where these statements are fitting into. If there is an alliance building between Greece, Cyprus, and Armenia, I would love to see that convergence of interest between these nations. If there are other things going on, I mean, I can go on this, but it's just very important that I want to see consistency. I want to see policy, not sporadic statements here and there as response and be defensive.
Thank you, Vadim. I mean, obviously, you're bringing up issues of foreign policy from Armenia's perspective, but I would like to go to Diana now and ask you, Diana, what do you think, how do you see yourself understanding Turkish reaction or Turkish perceptions of Armenia? Not Armenians in Turkey, not Armenian diaspora, but specifically the country Armenia.
Well, this recent military escalation on the border between Armenia and Azerbaijan was distorted in especially pro-governmental media outlets. And it is interesting to see on how the media outlets were trying to reflect on the events. First, they mostly tried to, of course, unanimously, they all tried to blame Armenia as an aggressor and the first they started attack. But there was a very dangerous thing in sense of they tried also to portray Armenia as not only aggressor, but also as a very unreliable and unpredictable actor in the region that is attacking and trying to destroy the energy security in the region. I mean, they were saying that Armenia also targeted the pipeline, that why this happened in Tovuz region, because it's in the strategically important region of pipelines passing. This is a very dangerous narrative, and this was instrumentalized by a lot of nationalist groups within Turkey. And we also see how not only Turkish nationalist academics and some experts, but also they are taking this narrative from Azerbaijan academics, and they are closely cooperating with each other. And that's why I think that it's very important that to not overreact. Armenia should constantly show and reply to these attacks in a very sober manner. And in my opinion, this passionate even support of Turkish government of Azerbaijan is nothing more than just a diplomatic act, because for Azerbaijan it's very important to feel its strategic alliance with Turkey to be emphasized over and over again. And also we should not forget that Turkey is already involved in two fronts with Russia, in Libya and Syria. And this might be, from strategic perspective, a bit difficult to imagine why Turkey would want another front of confrontation with Russia. And another interesting thing that for the first time I noticed, I never saw this narrative before, but the pro-AKP media outlets were also showing that the main narrative was the following. Armenia is a small state which cannot do this kind of massive attack on Azerbaijan, which means that this was actually manipulated by Russia, United Arab Emirates, and France. And this was a message to Turkey that we are here going to disrupt your plans in the region and also your plans in Libya and Eastern Mediterranean. And unfortunately, this time, in comparison with 2016, the information war was much higher. The distortion of information was much higher in Turkey. And this also is related to the fact that for the first time in military escalation, the Azerbaijani general was shot down. This was also bringing the emotional connection with the military in Azerbaijan. But that's my most important advice, that Armenian community and Armenians just do not overreact and try just to counterbalance and try to give a very sober narrative in response to Turkish claims and Turkish aggressive policy.
Thanks, Diana. Babacan, I'd like to ask the same question to you.
One thing which is very important to emphasize, it is that first ever from 1992, we have seen direct threats articulated by the Turkish government towards Armenia. This was a clear break of the tradition, which was, as I said, stated back in 1992 with the famous case, with the famous arrival of Russian General Shapochnikov to Armenia, where he at Zvartnots Airport declared officially, announced actually, that if Turkey ever threats Armenia directly, it will be the beginning of the Third World War. And after that, in 1992, we haven't ever seen direct threats to Armenia from Turkish elite, threats which has obvious military also connotations. So we have the break of the taboo which was stated, and this clearly shows that we have here not only just relations between Armenia and Turkey, not even trilateral relations or trilateral frame with Azerbaijan, Armenia, and Turkey, but here clearly it's an initiative or an endeavor by Turkey to bring also the proxy war or something like a proxy war to the region of South Caucasus, where Turkey is not alone. It is with Russia, it is with Western powers, it is with even China, which is a new actor in this region. So clearly what we have seen is the beginning of, or at least it's an endeavor, it's a trial to start a proxy war also in this region. And of course, there are some concerns from our side, but we should be very attentive to the main messages which are coming from Turkey. And another important thing is that, as in even in the case of football diplomacy, right now we see that Armenian-Turkish relations directly has no improvement, no development. What we have seen between two countries, both in negative sense and in positive sense, are underway when there are also some outside stakeholders. Besides that, we have no direct connections. And here I totally agree with Vahram, that we need, besides everything, besides diplomacy and everything else, which is also very important, of course very important, we need also some direct work with Turkish society, which is very important, because 80 million people, or even more, they are not going anywhere, and Armenia and Turkey should have some direct connections someday. So this work should be done right now, and we should start it yesterday. And the last thing which I would like to emphasize, it is that unfortunately, with the current government of Turkey and with the rhetorics and with the all general discourse and narratives which are being every day produced and reproduced in Turkey, where Armenia is a clear threat, where Armenians are those who are trying to somehow break Turkey into pieces, has no leaves no place for any any dialogue or for any possibility to have at least some good relations or good dialogue even. So we are right now going into a decade where we will see the rising of this anti-Armenian rhetorics, and which will be directed towards not only Armenians living in Turkey, but towards Armenia and Yerevan in general.
Thank you, Varujan. I wish we could have ended our conversation on a positive note, more positive than how we ended it now. There were a lot of issues that we wanted to discuss, larger Turkish foreign policy in the Arab world, and as well as, in more depth relations with Georgia, relations with Russia. These all came out in our conversations. But I do want to thank immensely and greatly for our guests, Professor Sanjan, Ara Sanjan, Vahram Dermatevosyan, Varujan Geramyan, and Diana Yayloyan, for their informative insight, their patience, and staying up late-ish for our conversation. And I hope you can join us in the future individually or in another panel for a more in-depth discussion about hopefully one specific issue at a time. And for all our listeners, stay tuned and hope to have you listening to us in our future podcast.
And that concludes this conversation on Grung about Turkey. We look forward to your feedback, including suggestions for future conversation topics. Contact us on our website at grung.org, that's G-R-O-O-N-G, or on our Facebook page, ANN-Grung, or in our Facebook group, Grung-Armenian News Network. Special thanks to Laura Osborne for providing the music for our podcasts. I'm Avik Manicharyan, and on behalf of everyone in this episode, I wish you a good week. Thank you for listening, and talk to you soon.